Welcome. I'm Avery.
And I'm Grace Ann. And this is Drift, a podcast exploring stories and science of Barnegat Bay's past, present, and future.
Welcome, everyone, to the second episode of Drift the Podcast. We are very excited to have a special guest with us today, and that is none other than our wonderful executive director, Britta Forsberg. We're excited to hear all about her stories and wisdom today. Britta has been the executive director at Save Barnegat Bay for 9 years, 13 years as a member on the board, and has been involved with the organization as a volunteer since her childhood. So she's been with us for a long time and has lots to share. So this is our civics episode. We have election day coming up, so we thought it was fitting to talk a little bit about our advocacy mission and how this ties into our work on the Bay. So I will pass it over to Britta, who is going to share a little bit about all of that.
Thank you, Avery. So I guess you could say that I have a little bit of passion for Barnegat Bay. I am basically born and raised right on the Bay in Point Pleasant. My family owns and operates a boatyard called Forsberg's Boatworks. And I grew up playing on the Bay every day, you know, where some children maybe play at a ball field. For me, it was just natural to play on the water, whether that involved ice skating in the winter or on sailboats or other boats during the summer period or just swimming all day long before our stinging bay nettles arrived. Basically, I fell in love with the Bay at a very early age. So I've been fortunate enough to enjoy the Bay, and it just made me passionate about wanting to protect it. It used to be that every bird that flew by our front window, we would have a challenge to try to identify it. My mom had binoculars and a bird book right by the window because we had to know. We had to know whatever fish was that came out of the Bay. We also had to learn to eat all of those things.
Isn't your first run-in with being an advocate, right? I mean, you have a past career choice that was also related to this work. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I can just say that apparently when I was born, my mother said, "Where did she come from?" Because I have had an opinion about everything since I was a little girl. Seemingly my hands were on my hips since I was little. So yes, Grace and I got involved with civics very early. It seemed to me natural to go to a town meeting if you had a concern. And for me, as I said, being in love with the Bay, some of those early, you know, issues that I got involved with in Point Pleasant, where I grew up, was recycling and garbage care. I invented my own recycling program at our family boatyard. I think I was maybe 14 or something like that. But eventually that led me to becoming more involved with politics and actually running for public office. I eventually moved to Lavalette, the borough of Lavalette, and I ran for town council there. If you want to have a little chuckle, I ran against my ex-husband there, who was a Republican, and I happened to be a Democrat. And I know lots of people get a chuckle out of that, but I actually think that most families are split, that it's unusual for everyone to kind of agree on the same political spectrum. And it's really important, actually, for people to have their own independent minds and to be able to be feeling free to express what they think and how they feel about issues. In fact, that's actually the healthiest way to be. So for me, I served on the Lavalette Town Council for 6 years, and it's a very Republican town generally, and I happen to be a Democrat, but I was able to serve because I really feel that most local politics actually has nothing to do with party affiliation. Is generally about how you're running your town and the nonprofit business of picking up garbage and policing the streets and making good budgetary decisions about our tax dollars. And that really has nothing in my mind to do with what your partisan politics may be, which leads me to Barnegat Bay. And essentially, you know, in my mind, the Bay is not a partisan issue at all. In fact, Barnegat Bay is the largest body of water in the state of New Jersey. And it runs from a little town called Bay Head, or the head of the bay, all the way down the Barrier Island, past Seaside Heights, past Island Beach State Park, past Barnegat Lighthouse, to the bottom of LBI. And it encompasses a land area that drains the bay that runs out to Jackson Township, almost the border of Ocean County in the western part of the county, and a little bit of southern Monmouth County. So essentially everyone who lives in that space is involved with the preservation of Barnegat Bay. And then, of course, we run a fantastic hospitality business at the Jersey Shore. So everyone who comes here to vacation, play, recreate, also has a role in protecting and restoring Barnegat Bay. And so it's not a partisan issue. And we do enjoy support from every portion of the political spectrum of folks who want to advocate for Barnegat Bay.
Something Grace Ann and I had talked about in our last episode was the different entry points into loving Barnegat Bay and feeling connected to it. And that's a big part of our work here. We have everyone under the tent, from hunters, clammers, fishermen, people who come in just for the summer. If you want to talk a little bit about how that shapes our work here and who we interact with.
Yeah, I think that's a really valuable conversation point, because perceptions, you know, oftentimes rule our thoughts and our decisions, and the perceptions may not actually be what reality is. And so for our organization, we happen to be a 50-year-old organization in Ocean County. That's a long time to survive as a community organization. And I like to say that we have a big tent and a very loud family. And what I mean by that is that we let anyone get involved with Save Barnegat Bay. I don't say let, anyone can get involved with Save Barnegat Bay. You just really, the decisions are made by those who show up, right? And those who get involved. And that's true in your town. It's true in any organization that you're involved with. And in our organization, we don't ask, you know, who you are, where you're coming from, or why you care. What's most important to us is that you do care. And then whatever it is that you can bring, we very much value and need. So for some folks, you know, perhaps they're retired and they have some technical expertise that they'd like to contribute to the organization. For other folks, maybe they fish or swim or recreate or hunt or a boat, and they have something to contribute. Other organizations, maybe flower clubs or rotary organizations, it really varies. And what I will say, being the captain of this ship as the executive director, I try to keep some order, but generally speaking, we it's a pretty loud and opinionated crowd. We have everything, just to give you an example or a glimpse on our board of directors. We have currently, I think, 12 directors, and they are representative of a variety of communities around the bay. We have people who work on the water, who derive their living from the water, as well as folks who are academics, who have PhDs and are in the teaching world.
Yeah, and I think that also speaks to the fact that to be an advocate doesn't necessarily mean that you are the person on the front lines, like you, for example, who have made this career out of doing this work, which is wonderful. But a lot of people, I think, get intimidated that if they can't live up to that standard, they're not doing enough, or they're not showing they care or making real change. But I think what you're saying speaks to the point that if you have talent or passion, you can contribute in so many ways, and you shouldn't let these cultural barriers that we've put up prevent you from getting involved in some way. You know, we need graphic designers to make communications, and we need scientists, and we need politicians and municipal leaders. Everyone's on the front lines, and it doesn't necessarily have to be this picture that we've painted of what an advocate looks like, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know anybody who wakes up in the morning is like, oh, I'm an activist or I'm an advocate, or, mm-hmm. you know, it's just not intuitive or natural for people to happen to people. So first I would just say a lot of people don't know what the word advocate actually means. So what I say that, and you can look it up in the dictionary, but advocate is both speaking for something positively and speaking against something. So negatively, so you're doing sort of both actions, and largely you're advocating for something that doesn't have a voice of its own. So the bay doesn't have a voice. The water doesn't have a voice. The critters, well, they might have a voice, but it's not English. So, you know, do we have a role as residents, as people who live here, who enjoy this resource, to speak up for that body of water, to speak up for those animals and for those plants? And I think the answer is yes. And that voice that you provide can come from a variety of experiences. Perhaps you have what I call a gateway experience, where you participate in a cleanup and you're out in the woods. Maybe you're with your children, grandchildren. You have an opportunity to participate in a beach cleanup, or you're out in the woods and you suddenly realize that we have a litter problem and that people are dumping illegally in the woods and that there actually is an environmental issue in your neighborhood, wherever that might be. Or maybe you're out fishing and crabbing and you find there's debris in the waterway. Or you see people applying chemicals to their lawns, or there's such a wide variety of things that may be a part of your experience as a homeowner, as a visitor, as someone using the resource in some way, as you said, these entry points. And your opinion, what you're seeing, your observations are really important. And you can oftentimes inform us on a role we might need to play. So I'll give you an example. A homeowner recently reached out to us, happened to be from LBI, and she noticed a construction site nearby her home where I guess they were installing a deck, and the deck was made from plastic lumber. And as the contractor cut the plastic lumber, small shavings of plastic were all over her street. And then it rained the following day, and that all got, you know, sloughed down to the storm drain, which was headed for Barnegat Bay. And so she reached out to us to let us know that she saw a problem, didn't know what to do about it, had called town hall, got a few answers, wasn't sure about the answers, and wanted to call an organization that might be able to help. And so she called us. And so we're going to be assessing that issue, seeing ways in which we can help. Maybe there's a law that's needed. Maybe there's education that's needed. But just as a real example of what we mean, that you can get engaged in your space, in your neighborhood, and really help out.
So yeah. can you speak to the history of, say, Barnegat Bay a little bit, and that, and the story of how advocacy has come across, you know, passing legislation, conserving land, and speaking up for this space for the past 50 years?
Sure. So what I like to say is that Save Barnegat Bay formed at a kitchen table, because I think most community groups, most responses in a community happen when a few neighbors get together, they see a problem, they gather at a kitchen table, they call, you know, three people they know, and they say, well, what can we do about this issue? And so in 1971, a group of neighbors from Bricktown and Manilocan got together at a kitchen table and decided they were upset about a development project on a piece of wetlands. Well, that spot is now known and loved as F Cove. So the F itself is not a natural cutout in the marsh. It was done by a developer who planned to put condominiums there. And the neighbors essentially fought that development. And in doing that, they became empowered. They learned about laws and rules and regulations. They had hired an attorney, and they started to officially sort of push back on the development pressures. In doing that, you know, as the history unfolds, they end up saving a great deal of land. And that includes Trader's Cove, as we know it today, in Bricktown, which is currently a park. The entire wildlife refuge areas in Bricktown. And over the 50 years, thousands and thousands of acres. So, I think that if you told those original neighbors this was going to cost millions of dollars and take 30 years to protect these spaces. They probably would have quit that day and said, oh, forget it. I have a life to live, right? But magically they didn't. And they have lots of we have lots of victories because of that. But I think to your point, Grace Ann, you know, the transition, you go from being a group of neighbors fighting perhaps a development in your own neighborhood, right, for protection of your own family and your quality of life and the resources. And then what happened is other pockets of neighbors along the watershed found out, they read in the newspaper what was happening in Brick Township. And they called those neighbors, and then they got involved in other battles. So essentially, I always say, you know, the current kitchen table we have is massive because generally speaking, we do a lot of objector work, which means that a development proposal comes to your neighborhood. You give us a ring. We come. We can't do everything because it's a big watershed. There are 37 towns that drain to Barnegat Bay, but we'll help you. We'll coach you. We'll guide you. We'll provide assistance where we can. And then that led to us realizing bigger problems that we thought, okay, this needs a bigger solution. Well, what is the bigger solution? In some cases, we ran petition drives. In other cases, we wrote laws. So we started to learn that, well, we could set policy at the statewide level, you know, and that could improve Barnegat Bay. So one big example I could use for that is the New Jersey fertilizer law, which we wrote essentially on the back of a napkin. It started out and we had several towns who were anxious to adopt the fertilizer ordinance. So Stafford Township and Seaside Park were the first two towns, but sort of the nature of towns is they want to each have their own little special mark. So we ended up with two different ordinances with two different fertilizer content restrictions. And of course, big fertilizer companies aren't going to make individually branded fertilizer for different municipalities. So then in this particular case, we went to the county and could the county pass a fertilizer ordinance? Well, they had some ability to do that. It would have to be the Ocean County Health Department, but how enforceable would it be? And again, could we get the fertilizer companies, the major fertilizer companies, to create a labeled fertilizer product just for sale in Ocean County? Well, that seemed a bit absurd, right? So we eventually end up at the state legislature. And in the end, it took several years and lots of money and science. And we had to fight, in some cases, large fertilizer companies. But to date, it is the strongest fertilizer content law in the nation. And we did achieve that victory for Barnegat Bay, removing or helping to remove millions of pounds of nitrogen from the bay annually. And as a side benefit, at least from our point of view, it ended up helping all water bodies in the state of New Jersey. So people can have a tremendous impact just starting out, you know, with a small idea. And since then, we've written several other laws and influenced other legislation that is protective. So I think I touched on some things, which is, you know, the ability to stop developers or curtail development, especially in spaces where it's a sensitive environmental area or nearby the water. We're not opposed to all development in all places all the time. However, we are very concerned and sometimes opposed to development in certain spaces where there are threatened endangered species, wetlands, you know, other types of environmental features, flood prone areas, you know, those kinds of things, or perhaps, you know, some space with mature tree canopy that might be contiguous with other wildlife management areas. You know, things like that, where there's an environmental sensitivity that the development really belongs in a more densely, you know, developed area rather than creating more impervious cover in Ocean County.
So I wanted to continue kind of painting a picture of the diversity of our advocacy work here at Save Barnegat Bay. And I'll rope Grace Ann in this conversation too. It takes a lot of different forms. It's everything from education, working on legal cases, as Britta's been talking about, with stopping development if it's necessary, policy lobbying, organizing with citizens on the ground. There's a lot of really exciting things that everyone can get involved in based on their strengths and experiences. So if we wanted to discuss a little bit more about our work in that regard, I'd love to hear from you both.
Well, I'll just add a little anecdote that not long before I joined Save Barnegat Bay, I was not interested in anything to do with what I considered and called broadly politics. I never wanted to engage in arguments or conversations about those topics because I felt like I wasn't well enough educated about the topics, and I didn't want to sound ignorant or just be a part of something that I didn't feel well equipped to be a part of. But somewhere along my journey, right before coming to Save Barnegat Bay, so I can't blame Save Barnegat Bay for this, I realized that if I wasn't sitting at the table having conversations about the decisions being made around me at any level, that I wasn't a part of the conversation and I wasn't a part of the choices being made about my future and my community. And somewhere I just had this awakening that I needed to get involved in some capacity because I am a young person in the world. I want to be a part of the positive movement of our community, and I don't want to sit back and just let things happen around me. That's not ever been my way, actually. I just didn't realize.
I guess I can talk with that about that a little bit, because I think it's a misunderstanding that a lot of people have that, you know, you have to be fully knowledgeable about a subject before you can get involved, when actually the pathway of involvement really begins with awareness for anyone. It really doesn't matter where you're entering the conversation, whether you're an elected official or just a community member, taxpayer, and resident. You know, you become aware of an issue. Is the first thing. Maybe you read it in the news, maybe you hear it from a neighbor, hear it at the bus stop, whatever it is, suddenly you realize there's going to be a development in your town or your neighborhood. Or somebody saw an algae bloom in the local lake or pond. Or I've noticed there seem to be less fish or crabs this year. Or I've seen a lot of sea nettles this year. It's an awareness. That's the first step, that you just become aware of whatever the issue is. The second step is typically education, as Grace Ann was pointing out. So now that you're aware of this, you start to ask some questions. It's an inquisitive mind is really what provides for education. So you start poking around. Maybe you go online. Maybe you talk with a neighbor. Maybe you make a phone call, or you go and try to discern a little more additional information. Now, saving a body of water for 50 years is a big project, and there's a lot of science. And that science can be confusing. One of the biggest reports on the health of Barnegat Bay by Dr. Michael Kenish is some 650 pages long. Now, if you care about Barnegat Bay, does that mean you're going to sit and read and understand everything Dr. Kenish is reporting on? Probably not, right? But you still care about the bay and you still care about these subjects. So you might turn to an organization like ours or others. You know, there's plenty of other organizations working in this space, and look to see the information that they have. Maybe you even find a podcast. So the second step is education. First, it's just awareness that there's a problem. What are we saving Barnegat Bay from and for, and why? And then what is wrong with the bay? What is it really facing? And then the third step is typically engagement. Now that I have this information, I'm aware that there's a problem. What can I do about it? Right. And so then you start to learn, oh, I'm going to show up to a cleanup. I'm going to show up to a workshop. I'm going to listen to a podcast. I'm going to look at someone's Facebook. I'm going to decide to plant natives in my yard. I'm going to make sure that I don't use pesticides that might hurt bees and our pollinator friends. And then usually the fourth step is action. You know, the things you decide to do. Now those actions, I think Avery, you were talking about that. So what are some of the things that you could do? Well, you could write a letter. You could make a phone call. You could go to a meeting. You could join a group. You could make a donation. You could start to do things on your own property. You could talk with your neighbors and convince those folks to do things on their properties, right? There's almost every way that you could get involved. Maybe you are a member of an organization or club. You could host us to come in and give a talk and educate your peers and friends about their role in the effort to save the bay. Basically, anyone and everyone can do something for Barnegat Bay. Your level of comfort about what you want to do, how much information you have on a particular subject, whatever your method of making a difference is fine. And I will say, with regard to elected officials, in our towns, people run for office, and there is no requirement of a basic education. This is a democratic society. The people who are serving on a variety of boards, whether they be land use boards, environmental commissions, planning, zoning, mayor and council, they are all coming to that post with a variety of experiences and background. And there is no way that any elected official could be knowledgeable about every subject that's important to us. So you have a role to show up. Maybe they don't live next to the water and you do. Maybe they didn't see the problem that you saw and you did. They're nothing to be afraid of, the mayor and council and planning boards. They actually, the only way they can make a better decision is if someone comes and helps them to make a better decision. Their whole job is to listen to you. And certainly if there's a subject that you think Save Barnegat Bay could help with, that we might be able to find you the right expert, then we're happy to do that. I think, you know, for me, that's the space that we love to be in.
I always appreciate hearing your wisdom on this, because I think that there's important recognition that we all need to have, that advocacy is a team effort. It's not something that's going to happen in a miraculous turn of events overnight. In most cases, we're in this for the long haul, and it's not a single person that can, they can make a big difference, but it's not going to be solved with one person. And so we and other organizations like us are there to support people in this long fight, and there are outlets to get engaged, ways to get empowered. And I think instead of getting scared off by the road ahead of us, we should be excited about the challenge of all of that. It's been a very, on a personal note, it's been a fulfilling journey myself, getting more engaged on the civic level and just talking to people on the ground, because those are the most important perspectives that you can consider in your work in this field.
Yeah, I think for me, it's my favorite space. I really like people to be authentic to who they are and what their experience is, and also to feel that they can say and do the things that they feel and need to do. There's no way that I could understand what a waterman sees every day. I can try, and I can listen, and I can respect. But I'm not on the water every day, right? But I'm the principal spokesperson for Save Barnegat Bay. And if I was preset in my ideas and thoughts, then I would be excluding, we would be excluding a whole bunch of knowledge that's out there. And there's no way that we could be in everyone's lagoon, in everyone's backyard, from here to Holgate, or out to Jackson, knowing what is going on along every creek, stream, and river heading to the bay. There's just no way. So the way we do our job best is to make sure that we have our ear to the ground, finger to the wind, and the phones ring and the texts go off, and it is a pain in the neck because it's hard to get back to everybody. We really are inundated pretty regularly with requests, but it's actually just the way we like it.
Our grassroots.
Yeah, it really is. And there honestly is every perspective, I think, represented. I think, I know we're probably running out of time, but November 2nd is just around the corner, and I don't want to miss the opportunity to talk about that. So we are nearing in on Halloween weekend, and right after that comes Election Day on November 2nd. I would encourage all of our listeners to make sure you're registered to vote. It's obviously too late to, if you're not registered currently, to vote in this election, but it is important that you're registered to vote and that you take a minute to see if you can learn who your local representatives are and if you have choices to be made. There are a couple of questions on the upcoming ballot, and so few people unfortunately vote. And as I said earlier, the people who show up make the decisions. We also have right after Tuesday something called a lame duck session in the New Jersey legislature. Essentially, after the election, there's a short period of time before the holidays roll in. And then come January, the new cycle for the legislative session begins. So it goes every 2 years, and the whole Assembly and Senate is up for re-election or election. And they'll populate a new body and start a new agenda. So we have a couple of bills in the legislature right now for the state of New Jersey, and the lame duck session starts more or less the day after the election. So for us, we're going to be sending out a flyer and putting some content up in social media and on our website. We have four bills that we really care about coming up for the end of the year. So one is related to phosphorus. So the two leading nutrients that are problematic to Barnegat Bay or can be problematic to Barnegat Bay. They're also part of a healthy bay, but when their numbers are not balanced and they are in exceedance, then they are problematic to the bay and the critters who rely on the clean water. So one of them is a phosphorus content bill that would regulate the amount of phosphorus in detergents. And so really quick, why that's important is the detergent or phosphorus content laws were written in this state long ago. So some of these detergents have higher phosphorus content than is actually needed to make clean dishes and clean clothes. So this bill, Save Barnegat Bay, asked District 10, Senator Holzapfel, Assemblyman McGuckin, and Catalano to sponsor a bill that would regulate and restrict phosphorus content in certain detergents. And we're going to be asking folks to make phone calls and write letters to try to get it done by the end of the year. Another one is a New Jersey natives legislation that would require or allow for native plants to be labeled in the marketplace under the Jersey Fresh program at the New Jersey Department of Agriculture. So that's also really close to the finish line. Another one is neonics. It's a type of pest control that's bad for waterways, pesticide, and we'll be looking to pass that before the end of the year. And then a much bigger lift, I'm not sure that'll happen in this cycle. If not, it will be again in the next cycle, but it's essentially to drive the marketplace for recycled goods. So this legislation would essentially require post-consumer waste or recycled materials that have already been used once and are now recycled to be used in the creation of new products. So all four of these bills we're going to try to push on starting next week. So you'll see some literature coming from us, and we'll be asking you to make phone calls or write letters or help us to push for these measures. So it's going to be an exciting couple of weeks.
Thank you so much for sharing all of that. And this episode has been jam-packed with things that people can do to get involved. Everything from asking questions to going out and making observations in the environment around them, in their neighborhood, in their community, all the way up to the things that require a little bit more time, maybe where, you know, you're getting involved on the ground, maybe doing cleanups, maybe making phone calls, educating your neighbors.
And we hope this empowers you to get involved in whatever way you can. And on a timely note, at the very least, you can vote in this upcoming election. So thank you for joining us for this episode. We'll be coming out with our third one soon. We will be celebrating Native American Heritage Month, which is the month of November. So we are excited to expand on that conversation as well.
Definitely stay tuned for more episodes coming up. Let us know if there's anything you want to discuss in the future. Follow our socials and drop us a line if you're excited about something we've already discussed or you want to hear in the future. Thanks so much for listening.